Thank you for joining us once again with the Gist of Freedom, blog, radio, talk show. We're here at Jazz at Lincoln Center with the famous world-renowned trombonist, composer, writer, author, Ron Westray. Hello, sir. How are you today?
Doing great. Trying to come down off of the performance a few minutes ago and feeling good.
Tell us about this group that you're performing with and some of the music you all play tonight was just incredible.
Yes, this is the first band that I joined when I was a young musician. My first opportunity, like when I made the jazz draft, as you might call it, this was my first gig, which was the Marcus Roberts Ensemble. And so now here, 20 years later, I'm one of the veterans now. And 20 years has gone by like a flash. And now we have a whole crew of younger musicians that are the age that I was back in the day. And now we're the mentors for them. And so it's a real thrill to see the young guys coming up like we did in Marcus's ensemble, the Marcus Roberts, Next Generation. Or modern jazz generation, as he calls it. So it's really exciting to just see the cycle continuing, you know. And tonight is a hallmark of that cycle, and you know you can really see the evolution of the band and the continuum, you know, of the music, you know. And so very excited, very honored to be a part of this legacy that Marcus started over 20 years ago. And we're still at it.
And tell our audience about the music tonight. You just got, an overwhelming of compliments tonight about the performance, the arrangements. It was just amazing.
Thanks. The music tonight was based on four pianists: Chick Corea, Jelly Roll Morton, Thelonious Monk, and one other pianist, but essentially all of the music came out of three or four pianists' repertoire: Jelly Roll Morton, Thelonious Monk, and Chick Corea. There's one other pianist that I can't remember right now that we also addressed his music. Songs like Filthy McNasty, Horace Silver, that's the other pianist. So we actually are taking classic recordings and rearranging them for this ensemble. And I think that's the thing that makes the music so exciting. Lots of people in the jazz world know these famous recordings by these famous pianists, but they don't get to hear those same recordings that they've listened to redistributed, reorchestrated for an entire ensemble. So I think people really get a kick out of the familiarity of the songs, but also the new iteration of the song with the new ensemble and the younger musicians playing the classics, things like Filthy McNasty, Little Rudy Tootie, Mojo, a Joe Henderson classic made famous by Horace Silver, Cool Eyes, songs like that, older things like Jelly Roll Morton's The Chant, Dr. Jazz, early jazz, as well as things like Light Blue by Thelonious Monk, and things like Coming on the Hudson. We also did Chick Corea, Windows, which is a famous composition by Chick. So a very ambitious program and a lot of music. I think we played about 21 songs tonight.
Just amazing.
Yeah, in between two sets. And this was the second night, so it was really good because we had a chance to kind of test everything out last night, and then this was the second night, so I felt like it even stepped up even more.
Give our audience a little bit about your experience here at Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Yes, well, we are here at the New Hall, the Jazz at Lincoln Center House of Swing, as they call it. And it just so happens that I played in the band that built this hall. Winton's band started in 1993, the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra. And I started out as the lead trombonist for that ensemble at age 22 or 23. And at that time, we were still rehearsing and performing on the old campus of Lincoln Center. Lincoln Center, which is Alice Tully Hall, the Metropolitan Opera, American Ballet Theater, that campus. And so they eked out a little room for jazz, and we started there. But from being on the road for 10 years straight, that band, we literally earned the funds and built the equity, you might say, leading up to
what we see now,
which is the new jazz in Lincoln Center. So if you go from about 1993, the doors opened to this new hall in 2004. And so I like to say that I was in the band that built the hall, because we did it by the sweat of our brow on the road, literally building the equity so that we could put in the bid for what we see now.
And the music you composed, which you got a Grammy nod for?
Yes. The new building opened in 2004. I was given a commission by Winton in 2005. And the commission was based on a classic literary work named Don Quixote, which is one of the most well-known novels in all time. The challenge was to compose a jazz rendition of this famous Spanish novel. So I have the honor of being the first jazz composer to write an oratorio or a jazz opera based on Don Quixote. And we premiered that in 2005 here at the New Hall. So about a year after the doors opened, I had a huge premiere here. And that would actually turn out to be my last year in the band, which was 12 years in. So after about 12 years, I had my big premiere and essentially left Winton's band around that time to enter academia.
And that particular musical, composed music, allow you all to get the Grammy?
Yes, I received a... not the Grammy for the Don Quixote piece, but I received a Pulitzer Prize nomination.
Wonderful.
For the jazz opera based on Don Quixote. And it's titled Chivalrous Misdemeanors. So I took and kind of just changed the implication of the novel and kind of drew another title out of the implication of the novel and named the opera Chivalrous Misdemeanors. And so I was able to get a Pulitzer nom for that. And that year, I didn't walk away with the Pulitzer, but I got the nomination. But that year, they actually decided to give Thelonious Monk a posthumous award that year, and so I was, you know, I couldn't be mad at that.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
I, of course, I would have really liked that, you know, Pulitzer for jazz at that time, at age 35, but. The fact that they decided to give Monk the posthumous award that year, it's like, okay, I can roll with that because I love Monk. You know?
Yes.
And so, that was 2004, 2005, and essentially I left the band around 2005, the original Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. And that orchestra, of course, is now the house band here at the New Hall.
Thank you. It was a very slow evolution in terms of really knowing that I would be on the track to become a jazz musician. I would say by about age 16, I knew that I wanted to be in the legacy of jazz, but I had a lot of work ahead of me. But I would say that about age 16 was my illumination. But I started in the black marching bands down south. That's my tradition. If you've ever seen the movie Drumline, that's how I came up in that environment. And I was always a leader in that environment. I started with the middle school marching band, which turned into the high school marching band, which turned into the college marching band. And we're talking about black high-stepping marching bands down south, the real deal. And that's my foundation. That's where I got my soul, my rhythm, and just that cultural edge that I think really helps me a lot in jazz. And somebody said, man, what is it? I said, well, I think the marching band and just what was instilled in us at that early age in terms of rhythm and soul and dance. And I think that that's what separates people who have that experience from just general musicians who might be great musicians, but they didn't have that on-the-ground experience like that. So I'm really indebted to that environment. Then I slowly, of course, evolved into more of a straight jazz musician. So by the time I was a junior in undergrad, my junior year of lead the marching band, and by that time I was the president of the marching band and the president of the marching band fraternity and all that stuff. But it happened to also be the same year I met Wynton Marsalis, 1991. So it was a big scandal because I had the opportunity to make the jazz drive after I met Wynton. So I actually had to give up marching band. So that was, you know, I said, not playing marching band anymore. And, you know, I said, no, I can't. Maybe I would be out there with y'all. I might get hurt. I'm, you know, I'm out here about to make the jazz draft now. Kind of like an NBA player still playing pickup ball and even made the draft. It's like, dude, you need to stop. So it was like, I made that decision and essentially dedicated myself to jazz at around age 20. That's when the real paradigm shift changed, around age 20, right after I met Wynton. And then I met Marcus right after I met Wynton, and it all kind of collapsed into one thing, which turned out to be joining Wynton's band about 2 years later. And at that time, I was in grad school by that time. So even though I met Wynton in undergrad, it didn't blow my head up like, okay, I'm going to leave school and go to New York because Wynton just called me. You know, I went ahead and finished my bachelor's degree, and then I went on off to grad school as well. And while I was in grad school, I got the call from Wynton's organization. Wynton wants you to join the New Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, you know. And that was like, I was 22 or 23 at that time, trying to finish up grad work. And I actually started touring, actually, my last year of grad school. And I came on out of grad school in 1994, and the band started touring aggressively in 1994, the same year I graduated grad school. And we toured aggressively from 1994 all the way up to 2000, culminating in the new jazz at Lincoln Center in 2004. So 10 years of aggressive touring, and which culminated in the new hall that we have now. And again, I said, like, by 2005, it was time to leave the organization. So that's kind of my past.
And so how did this composing career come about? You know, not all musicians that play an instrument are composers.
Sure.
So this is a rare, beautiful opportunity for you to really bring your instrumental and composing, writing music to another level. So tell us about the composing career.
In jazz, typically all jazz musicians are composers because improvisation, which is the spontaneous element in jazz, which is paralleled in hip-hop by freestyle. So in hip-hop you have freestyling, which is where you have a vocabulary, but you are using it spontaneously. So it's the same in jazz. We have a set vocabulary, but it's a question of how much of it you can access spontaneously, and that's improvisation. So that's spontaneous composition. So all jazz musicians are composers because we're composing all the time when we improvise. Now, the formal act of composition where we actually sit down with the manuscript and the pencil, that's a conscious development. And so I started that in undergrad. You know, I was studying classical composition, so I studied classical composition in undergrad. I studied strictly classical composition in grad school as well. So my idea was to use the tools of classical composition, the tools of Beethoven, the tools of Mozart, and classical tradition, the European tradition of music, which is responsible for jazz. You know, jazz is just a microcosm of European music, and that's what the Africans did with the European music was we made jazz. But it all still goes back to European classical music. So my training is in classical composition. So my idea was to use tools of classical composition to demystify jazz composition. And I'm still on that path. But I started that in undergrad. I was conscious about, you know, studying composition and figuring out how to begin the process of writing like the masters, Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn. And then my next step was actually to just imitate compositional masters. So I started imitating Thelonious Monk's music, learning Thelonious Monk's music at the piano, imitating Duke Ellington's music, transcribing scores, and literally pulling every note off CD from the big band, Duke bands, analyzing scores. And then the opportunities start rolling in. Wynton recognized my talent when I was in the ensemble as a composer, so he started asking me pretty early on to write for the band. So I started writing for Wynton's band in 1999. That would have been about, you know, 8 years or so after my illumination in terms of wanting to be a composer. So it's not too shabby. About 8 or 9 years later, I was writing for the band.
And tell us a about this new album, this new release you have, that and where we can find it, and tell us what it's about.
Thanks. It's a slight departure towards other interests that I have in music. You know, jazz and blues have really the same mother, you know. And so on the blues side of things, one of my favorite artists is Jimi Hendrix. Because Jimi Hendrix, of course, is associated with rock, but at the core, he's playing blues. And he's playing the entire blues tradition. So when I listen to Jimi, I can hear the entire Delta blues tradition coming through his music. And so I have always been very attracted to Jimi Hendrix. So I finally got around this year after years and years of saying to myself, I want to do a Jimi record. I finally got the Jimi Hendrix record done this year. It's packaged. It's brilliant.
What's the name of it?
It's called Jimi Jazz. And it's on my record label called Blue Canoe Records, the label that I'm on. You can also, it's everywhere. It's on Amazon. It's on CD Baby. It's on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. You can also buy physical units. It's at Best Buy. It's everywhere. So the distribution is good. Jimi Jazz, and that's spelled like Jimmy spelled his name, J-I-M-I, not the typical spelling, but J-I-M-I, Jimi Jazz. And that was released around the 1st of August. It's doing really well. Getting a lot of great responses, and I'm really happy with it. I mean, I play it. I actually listen to it all the time, and that's rare because typically when musicians record music, you get a little tired of your own music, you know. But that record remains fresh. I'm really happy with it. It's really just fresh out, and also we've already submitted it for a Grammy nod, and so
this will be your second or third.
I am a soloist on one Grammy winning recording. That's the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra book one, which was 2010, and so we won the Grammy for large ensemble, and I'm the lead trombone soloist on that album, so I claimed that one as a Grammy association. I'm also the lead trombonist on the Pulitzer Prize winning oratorio that Winton wrote called Blood on the Fields, and so that's another association. Back to Pulitzer. So one Grammy Association, one Pulitzer Association, and now I'm working on my own Grammy nod with Jimi Jazz. And I think I'm very optimistic about it because people are very excited, people who listen to it. The record company is very excited about what we were able to accomplish in playing Jimmy's music in a jazz setting, but more so by way of the trombone. People ask me, well, how are you going to do that on trombone? How are you going to play Jimmy's music? But come on, what are you going to do? And so,
well, we know you're an art historian. Tell us a little bit about that, and do you know William Steele Grant?
William Steele Grant, yes, the black composer. Of course, I have not studied William Grant's music in detail, but of course, coming to school, former education, you know, you can't avoid black history. Definitely got to do William Steele Grant. But I can't say that I'm studying in his music, but very aware of his legacy. But I have focused on European composers, probably more so than black composers. Thomas.
And what could you leave our young audience, you know, young men and young women that is are pursuing a career in music, entertainment, especially in instrumental music? What can you leave our audience?
I would say make a decision relating to where your passion really is. It's not a thing, you know, make sure it's not just your parents telling you take piano lessons, not just your parents telling you play the horn or parent telling you to take ballet lessons. Make sure that it's that you have a passion, because if it's your passion, essentially you're gonna figure out the things and you're gonna seek out the things that you need to do. So I would first and foremost make sure that it's a true passion, that's a true interest of yours, and not just something that you're doing because it's your brother did it or your sister did it or because your dad said you should play guitar. Make sure it's a true passion, and I think that in itself will cover a lot of ground. For those students who don't necessarily know that they want to be professional musicians, but they're playing instruments. I would say work as hard as you can, because music fuels the soul either way. So whether you know you're going to be a professional musician or not, I would say work as hard as you can at learning your instrument, learning the history of the instrument, learning the language of the instrument. And one or two things might happen. Maybe by working hard, you will find that passion. But at the least, you will have that experience. And so just enjoy music. And for those students who already know that they want to be a professional musician, it's a lot of hard work, like any profession. So anything that you're going to be good at, anything that you're going to get acclaimed for, it's going to be a lot of hard work. And in music, you have these shows like American Idol, and it kind of gives the impression that all you got to do is get up on stage and get some applause, and then you're a musician. And it's just, that's not the reality. You know, real accomplishment in music requires complete dedication to the instrument and complete dedication to the history of the music, whatever the historical implication of your instrument or the historical implication of the particular music you're playing. You will have to dedicate yourself to whatever that is, to be well known and noted for what you're doing. There are no shortcuts in real music. Now, in popular music, we see a lot of shortcuts because it has to do with aesthetics and what you're wearing or something like that, more so than your actual musical ability. And that's commercial music, and that's always going to be like that. But for quote-unquote real musicians, it's a complete dedication. But the reward is that the music rewards that dedication with opportunities and with the knowledge itself.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to world-renowned trombonist Ron Westray. Ron, please let our audience know where they can follow you, whether on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Please let us know how can we locate you?
Thanks a lot. Yes, I have a Twitter account under Ron Westray. Also, LinkedIn under Ron Westray, my Facebook page, all under Ron Westray. Also,
spell that up for us.
That's Westray. Ron Westray, Westray. And so all of those pages are under my name, Twitter, Facebook, as well as LinkedIn. Most importantly, I'm a professor at a huge university in Toronto, Ontario, named York University, 60,000 students on that campus, and I've been in that position since 2009, and in fact, my title is the Oscar Peterson Chair in Jazz Performance, and so I've been there 5 years. That's one of the main places you can find me, is on campus at York University. However, this year, I'm off doing research. But if you'd like to contact me by email, I am an emailer more so than a texter. So email me at rwestray@yorku.ca, and I'll respond to your email.
Wonderful. Thank you all for listening.
Yes, this same band, Marcus Robertson and the Modern Jazz Generation, we will be playing Burlington, Vermont from October, I believe, 25th through the 27th. So just, I don't have the details of the hall, but if you Google Marcus Robertson, Modern Jazz Generation, Burlington, Vermont, you should see dates pop up somewhere in the range of October 25th to 27th. Those of you listening that are in that demographic, come check us out, or if you've got friends that you know that are in that demographic up there in Vermont, tell them to come check us out in Burlington around that time. Also, we'll be back at Jazz at Lincoln Center in January at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola. So I'm working a lot right now with my old boss, Marcus, and that's good. I need the work. It's good to play, and good to see the young guys coming up. So we'll be back at Jazz at Lincoln Center at Dizzy's. Tonight, we play at the Appel Room. That's the mid-sized room. But in January, we'll be in the Jazz Club, which is called Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola. There are three rooms here at Jazz Lincoln Center: the Jazz Club, the Appel Room, and the Big Rose Hall. So we'll be at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola in January.
Wonderful. Thank you.
thank you all for listening. Just the Freedom Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm Antonia Badon. And thank you, Ron Westray, for allowing us to be here to interview you at the Jazz at Lincoln Center in New York City. Have a good night.